Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are.
Whatever time zone you're in.
I'm Tia. I'm one of the independent consultants that's working with Amnesty International UK to evaluate its Brave campaign.
And hi, I'm Lauren. I'm the other consultant evaluating this campaign.
So why are we here today, Lauren? What are we doing?
Well, why indeed? So I think the main reason is we have a lot of insights on what it means to be a human rights defender, and it's come up as a really big theme across our discussions, our interviews. And I think, well, I speak for myself, we've kind of sort of gone down a lot of philosophical journeys into what words mean, and we feel that maybe it's a good space to share a bit of that learning and a bit of that thinking.
I think that's great. We certainly have learned a lot in these conversations, and I'd say largely positive. There's a real deep reflection about what it means to be a human rights defender, but also what it means to confer that title upon someone else.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's sort of an echo in what Amnesty wants to understand about the power in words and how people reflect and react to them, and that, and hopefully will improve future campaigns.
Agreed, hopefully. Yeah. Right, okay, so today we're going to talk about identity, the identity of being a human rights defender. And we're going to start by talking about labeling. So labeling somebody as a human rights defender. So talk me through maybe what you've understood the term human rights defender means in the context of Amnesty International UK's Brave campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that we've sort of seen it is this evolution from, you know, being a human rights activist to being a human rights defender. And there's this kind of evolving narrative around it of being someone who, that human rights defenders can be anyone, that, you know, you can be an ordinary person in the street and still be a human rights defender. So there's just been kind of accompanying narrative around, you know, a human rights defender is and can be anybody. And in a lot of ways, that kind of expands the space of, you know, anyone can assign themselves or identify with it. And I think there's this kind of strong connect to being a movement of human rights defenders. So let's rally people behind a title and behind a label. And maybe the label itself or the title human rights defender is a catalyst to a movement. And I think, you know, at Amnesty, there's a lot of, and especially the future theory of change, building a movement. And so to what extent does, you know, labelling people as human rights defenders start to catalyse a movement around that too?
Okay, and so what did that look like? Well, what did that look like in terms of lifting this term off the ground?
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, speaking to people, I think there's a degree of, there's some kind of need to elevate what it means to be a human rights defender for the purposes of recognition, I think, in a lot of ways. And that's how it comes through in a lot of, like, discussions we've had with people.
Yeah.
That maybe behind a more acknowledged and meaningful label is the better potential and influence on being recognised for your human rights work. But then that's not to say that you wouldn't be recognised if you weren't labelled.
Good point.
I mean, there's a bit of a challenging conversation there, maybe.
And yeah. What did it look like in terms of, were people resonating with the word human rights defender, your everyday person? Because from what I understand, it was really challenging to get this terminology clearly understood by Amnesty supporters, by the general public, by activists. What did that look like in your conversations?
Great question. And I think maybe, you know, it's useful to kind of reflect on the different stakeholders' interpretations and interactions with that. So, you know, from a sort of government perspective, we understand that, you know, human rights defender was key in terms of the guidelines and the policies, and that actually, you know, people's understanding of what it is and even the conversations around it in government increased, and perhaps there's a useful political tool in a word there. But then when it comes to the UK audience, there's also a degree of complexity around human rights in general. And then when you apply that to a person, it perhaps becomes more complicated because you're looking for an act or something that someone's doing. And reflecting that back on, you know, human rights legal frameworks in a way. We haven't mentioned the UN legal framework around human rights defender.
We're not going to right now.
Okay, I'll sidestep that one. But yeah, so you're absolutely right. I think from conversations, it wasn't necessarily clear what the ask was around what is a human rights defender doing and how can we support, protect them. But then, you know, for civil society at large, I think, and youth activists and others, I think there's a degree of maybe feeling a unity and solidarity with others by assigning yourself as behind a human rights defender campaign and or as a human rights defender. Mm. So I think there's a spectrum of, like, complexity to solidarity in this phrase in itself.
Yeah. One of the things I was reflecting on as a comment that I heard, they didn't know they were human rights defenders until we told them that they were human rights defenders.
Mm.
Now that maybe is a bit problematic. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, really great point. I had sort of, echoing sentiments, and I think the problem sometimes, I suppose, is, you know, a human rights defender is about a person, and when people are not sure, you know, whether they're a human rights defender until you label it, it's, I imagine, and I'm assuming, that it's a lot to do with your focus on the work they do. Mm. And, you know, to what extent should you be focusing on the rights that they're trying to achieve or sort of fight for.
Right.
But no, I had a similar experiences where people saw themselves as, you know, lawyers or the jobs or the people that they are in the interacting environment rather than as a human rights defender.
Yeah, it's a good segue into the next bit, which is about what you were hearing human rights defenders say about this label and how it felt to them. So tell me a little bit more about how so-called or not human rights defenders felt about the term.
Yeah, and maybe just echoing what I just said, I think that there's a degree of focus on what they're trying to achieve versus who they are. But also, like, the contextual piece around what does a human rights defender mean in the context that they work in. You know, in some cases, other languages or other experiences of what it means to be a defender may have different connotations and assumptions. Yeah. And I think then, you know, to what extent there needs to be greater analysis is, does this term fit this context, and or is the opportunity to achieve greater if we change slightly what it is in a certain context. So that definitely came through.
Mm.
Yeah, in addition to, you know, a human rights defender is very much of what you said, not a monolith, but actually there are local human rights defenders who are more professional or better connected, or, you know, there's so many variations here, and to what extent the human rights defenders you start working with all start coming from the same places, how do you then start to step out and look back at who's being left behind?
I think certainly how the term plays in the local context, and indeed the nuances of the local context. So it might be a term that people feel relatively familiar with in a metropolitan place. But as you become more rural, one of the things, or you move into more rural spaces, what was reflected back to me was this idea that, like, I have to switch between human rights defender and activist. When I go to X place, that term doesn't make any sense, but they do understand what an activist is. And I guess there's another question that I have around, you know, how the word human rights gets co-opted in different political contexts, where you may see the term human rights used as a pejorative. So therefore, proclaiming or having others or an agency proclaim that you are in fact a human rights defender, whether you knew it or not, maybe might be problematic in certain contexts.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. And I think, you know, we've, at least through my conversations, the association with the term human rights defender has been largely positive. Like, I haven't necessarily come across any, like, negative side effects of that, which definitely is coming through what you're saying. And that could be, A, because we didn't ask, or B, because, you know, these unintended consequences are much harder to surface.
Yeah.
But then, you know, if you are going to label somebody this, there's an accountability to understanding the negative side effects of being labelled.
I think one of the things that I was struck by is what was missing in the term human rights defender. So I know that certainly in some of the conversations that I was having, people were saying, I don't talk about, you know, I'm not, specifically I'm referencing someone who said, I don't talk about my pain as a defender. I talk about it as a human being. I talk about it as a this, as a that. And so I wonder how much space, when we give people these names, how much space there is to hold the varying different ways that people identify as human beings who action very important work, but as human beings who also live in contexts that are much more complicated, that involve a number of different identities that are being, that are under threat.
It's really interesting that the point you just made about not expressing pain as a human rights defender. Could you expand a bit more on that?
Yeah, it was a phrase, it was a sentiment that was conveyed of like, when I talk about, it's kind of, I think it's in large part linked to the conversations that are had about human rights defenders, is that it's, we're describing or we're talking about or surfacing really hard things. They are the faces of campaigns because of the hard things that are happening to them, right?
Yeah.
And so in a lot of ways there's, I mean, we can talk about re-traumatization in another discussion, but I certainly know that in one of my conversations it was a very challenging and emotional discussion about how hard it is to do this work and how challenging it was to have the experiences that this particular person had. But what they were saying is, I'm not experiencing pain as a human rights defender, I'm experiencing it as a this and this. And I just, I wonder if there's scope for the term and the way that the term is used and the way that people are described to hold more than simply the rights that they're fighting for. So I'm thinking about some of the action cards that we were looking at today, where it was like, this person is a insert occupation and they are doing whatever. And the ones that seem to be touching and resonating more are the ones where the human rights defender is connecting, or there's an attempt to connect and humanize and connect on a human level, and so those stories surface out. And maybe that's a personal, you know, a way that I get brought into campaigns is being connecting to a person because they're a person doing amazing work. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it really sort of resonates, this kind of idea that people's lives are multidimensional and iterative, and one phrase captures a moment in time but doesn't necessarily evolve with the person's life and the many dimensions that they feature. But also maybe in a campaign situation sits in that kind of irony or byrony. Binary.
Irony.
A combination of like the human rights defender's complex life, as you say, but the need for the UK audience to understand. Where does that phrase sit on a level of, this is the reality, but I need you to understand enough to action something. So, you know, there is a real kind of balance there, I think, between the two.
And do you feel that the audience understood enough?
Well, not if I explain things, clearly.
You know, Byronese. I will say, just like jumping off of that point about understanding, is that one of the human rights defenders that I interviewed said that they were making an active attempt to educate people on the term. Because it is part of it is now part of the narrative. So in the explaining of their work, they're using the term and attempting to socialize the term. So I do think it sounds like there's a kind of a need to educate amnesty supporters to a certain extent, and as well the people that human rights defenders are interacting with in their context.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe that brings us back to kind of UK local human rights defenders, that if you're going to also label them as such and train them and put them out into the UK context, you need to make sure that their supporting environment also enables their work. And if you've got, you know, young people who are going into communities and people like, oh, I don't know what you do, who you are, like, there's I think an accountability to ensure that the people around them also understand. So yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if, you know, some of the feedback that I heard from one of the human rights defenders is that the term felt messianic. So that it was given, it felt like it had this kind of gravity and weight that, you know, where does that sit in the context of, like, everyday people just doing extraordinary things?
Messianic means what, sorry?
Messianic being, like, derived from, like, the Messiah.
Okay.
Let's just get an actual term, an actual definition up here for the listeners. Can you just do some...
Yeah, I mean...
Riffing? Yeah. No, I've got it. an admirable messianic zeal, fervent or passionate, relating to the Messiah, the messianic role of Jesus.
Wow, so gosh, how does that relate to a human rights defender?
That it's got this kind of weight and gravity that like so big and huge.
And maybe that brings us on to kind of the power behind who is labelling you as well. Mm. You know, maybe activist has a more universal...
Yeah.
You know, anyone can be an activist. Nobody owns the term.
Yeah.
But to what extent is human rights defender owned by a human rights subsect of organisations that are the UN or Amnesty, for example... And so there's a power behind the weight of that label, in which, you know, I was labelled by these people, therefore I feel more like I have achieved something, or, you know.
I mean, there is that kind of legitimising force that happens when you're...
Yeah.
Somebody gives you a name.
Yeah.
And I think there's... I think that's probably what this particular person is speaking to, is that, you know... the giving of this title, which feels like that, like a title, right? Yeah. Like it's elevated in some way. It's different. Because if somebody, if Amnesty was like, oh, you're an activist, they'd be like, yeah, no, I know.
Yeah.
But if somebody was like, you are now a human rights defender, it feels like there's a title in there. And I kind of felt it in the context of the Marvel comics when I look at it, because it, for me, when I was... looking at it, I was thinking, wow, this feels... I know the point is that it's everyday people, but it feels superhuman in the way it's being presented to me.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I mean, when you associate anything with Marvel comics and the people within that, they're all superhuman. Like, how do you bring that...
People.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. How do you bring that down to the regular and ordinary?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah,
so.
It's a fine line there.
But you know, I'm already a supporter, so maybe I wasn't the target audience.
Yeah,
okay, so where do we stand on human rights defender as a term?
Well, I mean, is the question not like? I mean, is the concluding question like, if not a human rights defender, then what else? Like,
well,
you
what
know?
Were people before we came up with this term?
And I mean, so yeah, so, you know, if people are activists and so on, is that enough to elevate support and solidarity? Like, is it the elevation that's necessary to ignite and catalyze change? You know, is it that elevation and the trigger point in which the UK government pays attention and then the UK audience pays attention? Is that not the whole point?
Sure. Let's go back to, you talked to me about something about professional activists or professional human rights defenders. Well, can you remind me how that conversation went?
Yes.
Professionalizing the practice. Does it then move it further out of the ordinary?
Yeah, and so I suppose there's always going to be like a line, a limit where you don't want to, it become too... what's the word? Too elevated. that again. I mean, the conversation went largely around the kind of spectrum of human rights defenders, those who are more local grassroots activists,
right,
versus those who may be more educated, have been to university and are professionally defending human rights in city centres or in, you know, the global north, or have more access to the global north because of where you're situated in the country, and the extent to which I think the gap can become and spiral in a space where international NGOs or the UN is only very much focused on the city centres or the very like urbanised areas. So to what extent in the human rights sector you need to connect with more civil society organisations in order to, you know, usurp those people that are being left behind.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, how do you find and reach those people? And how do you know who is being left behind? How do you know what defenders or voices are not being heard?
Yeah, I think there's another, I mean, there's another podcast in here about who might be excluded. that moves us a little bit beyond the usage of the term human rights defender. But you've not ducked out of the question, so I'll bring that where we stand on the
tip. Oh gosh, we're going to go in like philosophical loops.
Good effort.
Where do we stand? I think that the term human rights defender serves a purpose in catalyzing action for certain audiences.
Very diplomatic.
And I think it has, from our, you know, research and data collection so far, we have many good examples of what has gone on to see positive change as a result of being labelled as such. But I think then, I think with any process like this, there's just a line and there's a catch in which that term starts to evolve with the systems of oppression and inequalities around it. And then it's that catch and that analysis that you need to put in place to make sure it doesn't start spiraling and becoming the elevated exclusive term.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be some way of answering your question.
Okay. And how far are we from like self-identification in one's activism? Like, are we moving to a state of like, in the same way as we would seek to normalize pronouns, would we be seeking to normalize one's activist views? Because there is a question about, you know, if human rights defender doesn't play well in my context, I don't want to be called that. I want to be called an activist, or I want to be called an activist blogger or an activist whatever.
And then it's on, you know, the NGOs or whoever to then honor that in the campaign spaces and the local context.
But where do they fit in the campaign space? Yeah. If the tagline is, like, you know, you end up with too many hashtags.
But then, to be fair, like, I think when you do research with human rights defenders, as we've seen in the On the Frontline report, you know, you have the opportunity to identify yourself, whether it's your name, your role, or whether you want to be a woman human rights defender, or whether you want to just be anonymous, or whether you want to be an activist. Like, I think the option is there in research and evidence spaces.
Okay.
I think the fine line might be when you translate to the UK audience again, like in a campaign space, you know, here's a, but then because Amnesty is working with individuals at risk, it's one person's case often put into the world. So however they want to be labelled should be honoured in that.
Yeah.
It's often, I think, when it comes as a collective that they're labelled more like, you know, here's a category of human rights defenders.
Look at all of them in this space.
You know, but is that not, this is going way off topic, but is that not the problem with the world where you need to categorize things in order to understand things? So
yeah, I mean, you referenced something I said before, not in this moment, about human rights defenders as a monolith, and that as a kind of, you know, as one of the options that you and I have discussed in terms of better improving participation, engagement, and inclusion of human rights defenders, and making sure that there is space for their voices to be heard and integrated and embedded into the campaign, is about what that representation looks like, because not all human rights defenders are the same human rights defenders or can speak on behalf of all of them, and that's the kind of wonderfully unique thing about everybody's work, is that it's the diversity in the context, the historical, the locational, the socio.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, you know, what does that mean? Not all human rights defenders aren't the same thing, but for the purposes of needing to have a coherent messaging strategy, they kind of need to be put into the same
100%
category.
I do think it's about the messaging. But then, is your messaging, if, you know, maybe there's some kind of lesson in terms of the messaging not being about people, but being about the action, you know, because you are at risk of making assumptions and categorizing people and kind of minimizing their lives when it comes to a message. Whereas if it's the actions they take, there's less, I think, risk of imprinting categorization and assumptions on them.
Okay. Right. I'm going to say that my final verdict, in as much as I can give verdicts on things, based on the conversation that I've had, I think that the term human rights defender is largely positive. I think people shed it and pick it up as it's convenient within their context, and maybe that's as good as it can get. I do think that there needs to be space for the way that people are described in campaign outputs that are about the kind of complexity that that person wants to see. You know, I want to be described as a cis, male, whatever, who does this, who is in this situation and is advocating for this. Or I am a parent and this is the reason. That the space for people's, for all of people's identities and positionalities to be included in a way that's the most comfortable for them. And I'm not entirely clear, so this may already be happening, and we've talked about this before, I'm not entirely clear the extent to which there's a linking between what gets put in action cards, for example, on the website, is, like, linked to a person and then their voice is included in that.
Yeah, really great point.
It may be or it may not be, I'm not sure, but I do think that where people want to be represented as a much more complex thing than the work that they fight for, the people that they fight for, they want their whole complexity to be included, which is some of the conversations that I've been having.
Yeah.
That there's space for that.
Yeah. I think that's a fantastic concluding remark.
Right. Okay. Well, then that's the concluding remark. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Hope this was interesting. Hope it was enjoyable.
Yeah, thank you.
We've certainly had a good time talking about what the term human rights defender means and kind of jumping off on it onto other conversations and topics. But hopefully this gives people listening a little bit of insight into the conversations that we have as evaluators and the stuff that we're finding really interesting and curious and having long philosophical conversations about that may not necessarily feature as heavily in the evaluation of the campaign's performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are obviously many offshoots that may arise in the future, let's see.
Okay, let's see. Bye.
Bye.